welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, I'm going to be joined by Eric Weber, the head of data products at Yelp, the digital native. There, he focuses on product experimentation, product analytics, and economic insights. Eric also happens to be a prolific LinkedIn contributor with over 130,000 followers. And one thing I'll talk to him about today is what type of content he posts and what motivates the selection of that content. He's held a number of roles over the year, including early stints as a professor at both Oregon State and University of Minnesota. Then he moved into the commercial space with roles at LinkedIn, followed by CoreLogic and List Reports before getting into his current company, Yelp. He has a PhD in math from Arizona State and is in the middle of finishing an MBA at the University of Chicago. On the side, he's also got a wide range of certifications you can view on his LinkedIn profile, and we're going to talk some about that in a few minutes. So with that, let's welcome Eric to the show. Hey, Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bill, thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting one. You know, one thing I'm curious about is everyone has their own story about how they got into the world of analytics and data science. Kind of what drew you into the space?
So this is one of my favorite stories. I think back in 2012, 2013, I was in the academic world and I taught Python R programming. I started using R back in the days where the 2008 days where it was not pretty. And around that point in time, my dad was working for United Health and they had started making some really big investments in the data space. And we were talking over the course of a few months, talking about like, what did this big data space represent? What was the value of it for United Health? And it just like kind of lit a fire and like piqued my interest in a way that I hadn't felt in quite some time. And that really was sort of the impetus for me getting into the space. So those conversations with my dad, all of the reading I started doing, I started noticing when I had time at night, my choice of like, do I work on my research or do I read stuff about this field that is starting to unfold, started to shift more in the direction of read about this field. And I think that kind of created the momentum for me to move into the space.
So it sounds like you're a true nerd like the rest of us for this stuff.
Oh, I definitely am. I embrace the like the details, the like to this day when I have time, just like reading about how quickly the field changes, what we're able to do now that we couldn't even do 6 to 12 months ago. I love it. It's one of my favorite things.
Well, you know, you already hinted at it with your reference to research, but you actually started in academia initially. You know, you got your PhD and you went into academia. And of course, now you're out in the corporate world. What led you to make that jump from academia out into the business space?
So looking at the academia world, like for me, what drew me in initially was I'm fascinated by like how people learn and make decisions. And so I studied sort of in a program that crossed education and mathematics. So I really studied like, how do people learn? How do they make decisions in this space? How do they get to make, to really like digest complex ideas? And I think the theme there is I was most interested in learning about people. I was most interested in learning about how they made decisions. And in the research space, I think, you know, you look at the academic world and the lead time to create things and get them out into the world and publish them is just much longer. There's less appetite for the rough draft version of things. There's less appetite for things like exploratory discussions that aren't like a final paper type of version. And for me, that's what I love about industry is that things tend to move more quickly. There's more appetite for risk, betting on things that are potentially more uncertain. to me, there actually feel, you know, a lot of people will talk about academic freedom. I think there's a lot of freedom in industry as well, assuming that you're making sure that the right things happen for the business. And so for me, it hasn't necessarily been this gigantic change. I've just focused my energy in a different way. And I think something that's connected across these spaces is I love teaching. So teaching was like my favorite part of being in the academic world, working with students, being in front of them, getting to help them like think about things in new ways. And there's a lot of similarities in industry for me right now, where we work on fairly complex technical products. And it takes a lot of education. It takes a lot of trying to imagine what it's like to not to have talked to someone who doesn't fully understand the space that you're working in. So I think there's a lot of parallels between the two. And so while I'm doing the job in kind of a different place, I think there's still a lot of like the motivations that kicked off for me are still working in the same way to this day.
No, it's interesting. I totally get where you're coming from too, because I always said for years, and when I was doing consulting, that I really consider consulting a lot like teaching. And back when I was in grad school, my favorite part of it was the year that I taught, you know, intro stats as a grad student, just because I love that process. So I've come the other way, as you know, and I'm now actually full time at a university, not in a traditional academic role, but it's still a role that I get to interact and teach with students. I do teach, you know, one consulting class. So it's I definitely get where you're coming from on that. Now, you mentioned a data product, and that's one thing I know that your role at Yelp now is tied to the creation of data products. And that's something that I know is relatively common in the, you know, the online digital native type space, but may not be something that people in the general community are completely familiar with. So can you explain a bit about what that means to be in charge of data products for Yelp?
So I think there's a couple of important things to mention is that over time, as you work in the data space, we build a lot of different things, right? From dashboards to metrics to platforms that are supposed to move data and give us insight into things. And I think what's happened is we've had this natural evolution of, okay, we built all these things. How do we create sustainable value from them? How do we ensure that we have a long-term roadmap for what we should be investing in, and maybe as importantly, what we should not be investing in? So the data product space is really about taking these larger platforms, these efforts, these products that we potentially have built an MVP for, a V0 of, and really having someone own the life cycle of that product. And very similarly to, you know, feature product management in other companies, you're trying to think about how do you create the most value that you can for the customer and ultimately for the business. And what's unique, I think, in this space is we're working on fairly complex technical products. So an example would be our experimentation platform at Yelp, which has a lot of components to it that are not something that you just pick up in a couple of weeks. And I think this will happen for a lot of companies as they ask, how do I create the value that I've been told exists from data science and analytics? There are a lot of things that we have to build that have to last a long time. And the truth is that most data scientists and analysts have too many responsibilities and are too busy to actively focus on the product lifecycle and think about where this should go and what it should do for the business. And so what we've done with our product managers across machine learning, analytics, experimentation, and data quality and governance is have roles that are accountable for thinking about the development of these products. And it's a newer space. And so I think in a lot of ways, we're still figuring it out how to dial it in. But I do think it's really important for companies as they move into like, okay, how do I create sustainable value out of these things that I've built?
So it's really, it sounds like the way you're viewing it, it's part of that journey from where everyone is building their own one-off processes that, you know, are individually managed to trying to, you know, do what everyone needs to do, scale, repeatability, all of that. And you're using data products as a way to help facilitate achieving that.
Absolutely. And this, you know, I go back to, there's a lot of statistics out there, whether I think they're accurate or not, I don't know, but we talk about how often projects and products end up failing. And I think part of that is if you don't have someone accountable for the success of that product, thinking about who the customers are, thinking about the value they're supposed to get, it's not surprising that a lot of investments that we make don't end up panning out. Because if no one has an incentive to think about the long-term health of the product, then you should probably expect that it might not pan out in the way that you want. And I think that's the question and thing that we're focused on.
That's good. You know, turning from your pure work job, one thing I know is that you've got an absolute ton of followers on LinkedIn, and you post a lot on there. What led you to get so active in LinkedIn, other than that I know you worked there for a while, maybe that turned you onto it, but how do you find the time, and how do you prioritize that within your work environment?
So The first day that I posted on LinkedIn was about 6 days after I started working there. And so like the beginning of this was really, hey, I work at this place. And up to that point, you know, my conception of what LinkedIn was did not include this idea of LinkedIn as a social network of sorts where people could learn and interact and like develop, you know, professional knowledge from each other. And even from the first post, it became very clear that that opportunity was there. And so I think people like having followers is not the thing I optimize on. Having a number of likes is not the thing that I like pay most attention to. What honestly keeps me posting is that I know and I hear from people that they get specific value out of how to think about the job search, how to think about their role and their career development, how to navigate potentially challenging conversations with other parts of the business. So if it were not for that value and that feedback that I get, it wouldn't be something that I was like highly interested in continuing to do. But my focus is really less on the number of followers and more on, okay, I know there's probably maybe 4 to 5 people who might read this, and it might affect how they approach something that day, or it might affect how they look at an assignment they're working on in school. And that's the stuff that I enjoy, right? Because that's, you know, there are people that I follow that have done that for me over time, where there'll be something they post maybe on a random Tuesday morning, and it actually like sticks with me for quite some time. And in terms of how I decide what to post, I think that's and how often to do it. My posting always happens before work. I do it early in the morning. I cannot context switch back and forth between work and trying to be on social media. But I try to keep some broader themes, and so I try to touch and make sure that I'm touching on analytics and the skill sets that people really need, I think, to succeed in the space. But I also try to go beyond that for people who are trying to navigate like the intermediate steps of their career, which is like, what do I focus on? What does it mean to go to a senior or a staff or a manager level in a certain space? And I think a lot of maybe the reason that some of the things I write resonate or that they're reflective of my experience. I don't just pick these topics and say like, here, I'm going to act as an expert on them. I try to approach it very much from a, hey, here are some things that I've been thinking about. I'm not an expert in this space, but I think this might be useful to you as you navigate some of your own thinking and issues at work. So it's an evolving thing, but it's also a lot of fun. I've met so many fantastic people through it. And I think that like the community that you find, which is what I've found on LinkedIn, has been really transformational.
Yeah. Sounds honestly like you're scratching that teaching itch a little bit too, when you mentioned about that it's about putting something down that people can take something from. So I think I'm sensing a theme in your interests here.
There is a theme that teaching will definitely always be a part of the things that I do. It's a huge motivator for me.
So let's flip it. Teaching, then there's being taught. And on your LinkedIn profile, people can look, and you actually have a huge range of certifications listed that you've taken the time to do. I mean, more than most people that I've seen by far. So I know people often think about, what should I get certifications, which certifications, et cetera. So given that you've gotten so many, how do you decide what certifications you're going to go get? And what would you recommend to people who are maybe just starting to develop their own certification list?
So I think the certifications are, for me, they were twofold. One is they really represent the things I care about. So I typically don't go spend time trying to take a class or get a certification for something that I don't have a passion for. Like, when I look at a certification or the different things I could work on, I ask myself, like, what are those things that at like 8 p.m. after a long day, I'm still interested in learning about and thinking about? And that's generally an indicator to me that I truly care about that topic, even when I'm tired, even when there's a lot of other things I could be doing. And so I try to make sure to focus on interest areas, and that's a recommendation that I give to everybody. The second component is, I think certifications are a signal for people that you are really focused and motivated in the space that you're in. So I think it's often less about the certifications, like which ones they are, and more that you are on sort of this continuous path to learning more and more things. And so for me, like, I've, you know, continued to go back to school, and I think I just had to promise my partner that I won't do it again after this current program. But it's something I deeply care about, and I think if you're going to be as effective as you can in the role that you're in, that like attitude toward continuous learning and development is really important.
Yeah, that's good advice. You know, speaking, you mentioned about that the continuous learning. If you think about the skills and traits that you have, what is one or two of those that you think has most helped you to be successful in your career?
I think the first one is adaptability. So this is something that if you went back and looked at my high school self, you probably would not be like, this is an adaptable person. But I definitely have leaned into that during my career, which is to say, like, okay, it's okay to pivot sometimes. It's okay to pursue a new path. And so as I've gone from the academic world to data science, and now I'm shifting much more into like technical data products, what I'm trying to do with that is to adapt to the things that I think matter the most and that I'm most interested in. And that's something that I think across data science, this field is going to evolve a lot, and it's not done. So I think this idea of being adaptable and being okay with not always having a perfect 5-year plan is actually really good. And for me, it's been really important. I think the second thing is that I've developed kind of a short memory for certain things. And that is, in this space, you work on a lot of hard stuff. And that means that projects that you work on and things you're trying to advance won't always go well. In fact, sometimes they end in kind of a disaster. But that's part of the process. It's part of learning how to operate in this space. And so I think those two things, adaptability and having a short memory for things, really helps me kind of continue to bring the energy I need to the work I have, and also not just get almost like stuck in, okay, this is the role I'm going to be in forever. I think once I got out of that thinking, it just became so much more fascinating to me.
That's interesting. I love that adaptability one, because I think when you're going through school, right, there's a very defined path. Well, you're going to get out of high school, and then you'll go to college, and then you'll get a master, right? It's very clear path, and the goals are very obvious. And I think we go, and I know I did, I went into the workforce, I sort of had this plan. And to the extent it wasn't clear, that stressed me out. But as you know, when I look back over my career, I generally knew at a high level where one day where I might sort of want to get, but the individual moves I made over time, I really, with one or two exceptions, I never actually planned them. It was something changed in where I was that made me want something new, and I found something unexpected, or someone just brought something to me, an opportunity that I wasn't even looking for, and I decided, you know what, this is something worth doing. And so I think especially for students who might be listening to this, you know, I don't think you have to be so stressed about what your career path is as you do about what your major is, because you got 4 years to get that degree and you're going to have to pick a major, but you've got a whole couple of decades to build a career, and that career could have a couple different stops, and just adapting to whatever's moving you at the time is an okay strategy, you know, beyond just know what you're going to do this year and what you might do next. And that's probably good enough, wouldn't you say?
It is. I really believe that. I think that's great advice. As much as it might be nice to think you have a 5 to 10 year plan about where you're going to end up, it's also important to remember that you're always going to be reacting to new information, and the world around you is going to change a lot. Like, just look at the last 18 months in terms of like how remote work and companies have had to make major shifts. It's just something like adaptability comes back, and it's so important. And so this idea of like school and having everything laid out for you, that won't be the same in your career. And trying to force that, I think, will actually stress you out more than anything else.
And in specific, I even think about role. Maybe you could say, I'd like to get into senior management in some fashion. That's great. But if you say, I want to be a VP of X, X may not exist when you look at it, right? When I started, there was no such thing as a chief analytics officer. There was really no such thing as a VP of analytics. The idea of a head of data product, I mean, these didn't exist. So you might end up in a senior role. But the senior role 10 years from now, when you have the experience and connections to get that senior role, could be something that we're not even aware of today, or certainly the focus of it will be vastly different. And so I think that gets back to that general goal of, if you want to go into management, great, pursue it. But you could end up in a role that counts as management that you never would have anticipated. And all you'll do is get disappointed. You might focus on a role and then it disappears. You're like, oh my gosh, I spent 5 years in that, or 10 years, and now no one's hiring that role. Well, that's okay. Exactly. They're probably hiring something else.
They are. There's always something. Yeah. It just may not be the exact thing that you thought it would be.
Well, you know, speaking of this, so if we're into the theme of things that that people might think about, what's one thing that you wish someone had told you before you started working?
So I've thought about this question a lot, and for me, it comes back to, work is not just about output. Work is generally about people and interacting with people, generating relationships with people, working with them toward larger outcomes. And so it's really tempting to become incredibly technically proficient, and I think it's important. But a lot of, back to our point about opportunities that come along, things that you didn't know were available, typically those are unlocked by people, not just by having technical skills or a certain component on a resume. And so that doesn't mean that you have to be this, like, you know, extroverted person who's meeting everyone in these rooms. Like, I'm not that, and I don't find a lot of joy in that. Mm-hmm. But what I do try to focus on is creating good relationships with people around me, and not just at your current role, but people who are in your industry, people who care about similar things. Because at the end of the day, like, people hold a lot of decision-making power, and those connections that you form are really important. And so for me, it's a continue, like, if I went back and told myself, you're going to need to invest in people kind of from day one, I think that would have changed a lot of things. Now I believe that, and it's unlocked a lot of things for me. But certainly as a student coming out, the temptation is to look and say, like, I will advance by doing this project or this set of things. But often it will be the people that you work alongside that end up changing your career.
That's great, great advice. You know, before we run out of time here, I guess, you know, a final question for you would be, we're just discussing here how much things are changing, how we don't know the future. So let's break our own advice and ask you to maybe predict one thing you think is going to be a big trend that's either currently emerging or is just about to emerge that'll impact our space over the next 3 to 5 years.
I think, so I'm going to be a little bit biased and talk about the space that I'm operating in, which I think, and let me take a step back and talk about why I think companies are getting to this point. companies have made major investments for a number of years now in the data space, and they've tried a lot of different things. Some of those have worked well, some have not. But realistically, for these companies to create sustainable value and benefit from these things they've spent a lot of money on, both people and platforms, they really have to think about, like, where is all of this stuff going? It's not going to be just the, what should we work on this quarter? It should be, where are we taking this particular product or platform that we're working on in the next 3 to 5 years? And that's not just a product manager role. This is something that I think if you're in data science or analytics or any space like this, the more that you're able to put that hat on about what am I building and where is it going, it will be a real value add to the people around you and the company that you're working with. And it may not be this gigantic new trend, but I think it will be an incredibly valuable asset to you. And you don't have to do something like go to business school to learn how to do this. This is not something that you have to have a certain degree to do. It's really just asking these questions. How is this creating value for the business? How can I focus in that area? And I honestly think that will be a huge trend in this space. And I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I appreciate your time today. I think your insights have been great for the audience. I know they're going to enjoy it, and appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to join me today.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed being here and looking forward to connecting with anyone listening. Always happy to learn and meet new people.